from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, the Senate Republican health care bill may have been updated, but California still faces hefty cuts under the new version unveiled yesterday. And so far, this version has failed to unite the party. We look at how the Senate GOP modified the health bill to try and appease both its moderate and more conservative factions, and how this latest draft could affect California. Join us next on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Senator Dianne Feinstein has called the new version of the Republican health care bill lipstick on a pig. In all the ways that it matters, she said in a statement, it's the same atrocious bill they couldn't pass 2 weeks ago. In this hour of Forum, we dig into the updated version of the Senate Republican health care bill known as the Better Care Reconciliation Act. We look at what's changed, what remains the same, and how the bill could affect California. Nearly 4 million people got health insurance in the Golden State under Obamacare, and the state's uninsured percentage has dropped more than half. Joining us is Julie Rovner. She's chief Washington correspondent for Kaiser Health News. Good morning, Julie Rovner.
Nice to be with you.
Thanks for being here. Also with us is Carrie Feibel, health editor for KQED. And Carrie, I want to start with you. So let's start with what remains the same, and that is, of course, the deep cuts to Medicaid or Medi-Cal here in California.
Right. Here we call it Medi-Cal. And that's the biggest concern for our state officials because we have so many people on Medi-Cal in our state. We've added 4 million people to the rolls. Under this plan, if it became law, those 4 million people would eventually drop off in the next couple years. And we're looking 10 years from now having to pay $30 billion more to make up for the federal cuts every year. That would be $30 billion a year if California wanted to keep the services the same and keep the same number of people covered.
And that's because this bill restructures Medicaid.
Yes, it really doesn't have that much to do with the Affordable Care Act at all. The people who got onto Medi-Cal because of Obamacare, that part relates. But it goes way back to the structuring that was put in place when Medicaid was first started. And it says the funding will be according to how many people you have on the rolls. There'll be a cap per person. And each state has to figure out how to keep expenses for each person under that cap. And if they go over, they have to pay for that out of their own pockets.
And in California, it's expected that some 14 million people will be on Medi-Cal next year?
We're already close to that. So that's, you know, a third of the state is on Medi-Cal and half of the state's children. And two-thirds of the seniors who live in nursing homes in California are getting that care paid for by Medi-Cal. So it's a crucial safety net program. The ripple effects would be big. We don't know exactly how California would cope with this. Would it just pay the doctors less? Would it pay the nursing homes less? Would it just tighten the eligibility so that less people could get it? There's different options, but none of them look good, according to state officials.
Some of the more moderate Republicans, Carrie, also raised concerns about how the bill cuts government subsidies to insurance premiums. So with the 1.4 million people who bought plans on covered California, how are they affected?
Well, that's unclear. But what we do know is that there's this Ted Cruz amendment. Senator Ted Cruz from Texas has proposed allowing insurance companies to offer plans that don't meet any of those Obamacare regulations that all the covered California plans currently have. So that's protection for pre-existing conditions and lots of things that people really liked. And covered California, because it is controlled and regulated by California officials, could say, we're not going to allow those skimpy plans with fewer protections to be sold in California. So there is that option, but it's unclear if there would be a lot of pressure from insurance companies to say, look, we really want to sell these plans. All the sick people are buying the plans that have good protections, and we're not getting the balance of risk that we need to have good financials to operate in California. So it's really unclear how it would play out.
Well, Julie Rovner, can you explain further this modified Cruz amendment that seems to be the big change that's made its way into the updated version of this Senate health care bill?
Yes, and I should caution that there are still analysts far more expert than I am who are trying to tease out exactly what it would do. But basically what it says is that if you're an insurance company and you offer a compliant plan, a plan that meets all the current regulations, you can also offer non-compliant plans. And these would presumably, they could waive any number of the protections in the Affordable Care Act, including not being able to deny people who have pre-existing conditions or not being able to charge them more. The provision would also allow people over age 30 to buy catastrophic-only plans. Currently, only younger people can buy those. All of these are, you know, say Senator Cruz, who's been pushing this very hard, is that healthy people are basically paying too much for the sick people, and healthy people should be able to buy, you know, plans that only have what they need. Of course, that suggests that healthy people will remain healthy all the time, which may or may not be a good bet for them. And as it turns out, it may be actually difficult for them to get back into plans with more generous benefits. Although this is also a subject of some debate. But the idea, according to Cruz, is that there are people who would like to buy less and pay less. And under this, they would be able to buy less and pay less. Although if they got sick, they would then have to pay more because while they would pay less in premiums, they'll pay more in out-of-pocket costs.
And you touched on a couple of the requirements under Obamacare. Could you remind us what those new requirements were that these sort of skimpy plans, as they're being called, or bare bones plans, wouldn't necessarily have to include?
That's right. You know, the requirements under the Affordable Care Act are that they have to offer these 10 essential benefits. And actually, the most expensive ones are the ones that everybody wants. It's hospital care, doctor care, prescription drugs, the things that people keep saying they could get rid of, like maternity care and mental health and substance abuse. Those actually don't add that much to the premiums. But the other rules are that people with pre-existing conditions can't be turned down. You can't cancel someone's insurance because they get sick. And you can't charge them more. And that's kind of the big issue here. The individual insurance market is actually pretty small. And, you know, now that they're letting sick people in, healthier people are definitely, if they don't get tax credits, they're paying more. They're paying higher premiums to help subsidize those sicker people. And that's sort of the crux of the problem here.
Yeah. So explain why folks are concerned that this would drive up premium costs for older, sicker people and destabilize the entire insurance market.
Well, the older, sicker people has to do with a different change, and then it has to do with changing the way that tax credits are calculated. Right now, your tax credit is based on your income and how much insurance costs. So if you're in a very high-cost place, you only have to pay a set percent of your income no matter how much it costs. And you can only charge older people three times more than you can charge younger people. Well, under this, you could charge older people five times more than you could charge younger people. Plus, the tax credits would be calculated differently. So older, sicker people would have to pay many, many, many times more than they do now. Younger, healthier people would be able to pay, according to the Congressional Budget Office, somewhat less. So this is basically saying that they don't want healthy people to subsidize the sick anymore.
Carrie Fable, you wanted to add something.
Yeah, and that is something that California would not be able to get out of if this became law. Covered California might say, well, you can't sell those skimpy, bare-bones plans, but the plans that still have those protections, the subsidies that have been offered under Obamacare to help people pay for those plans, those are going to be less generous. The plans will have higher deductibles, so those subsidies won't go as far. Like Julie said, older people will be facing higher premiums right out the gate. And they've also lowered the income level of people who would be eligible. So Californians now who make $48,000 a year or less are eligible for those subsidies on Covered California, but now that drops to $42,000 a year. So it's less people in Covered California able to get the subsidies.
Well, would it just be that only plans in Covered California would have to have all of the original requirements of Obamacare, or would state law protect any plans on the individual market that are sold in California and ensure that they have, you know, those basic requirements under the right now, according to the way that it's written in the Republican Senate bill?
Right. Well, most individual plans in California come through Covered California. I mean, there's some small areas where there's some outside of the market. But if you want to get those subsidies, you need to purchase through Covered California. Those plans have to go through the regulatory process so that the state is assured that the plan will be there for you when you get sick. And that's how you get the subsidies.
Julie Rovner, The bill also provided some increased funding to help people who may have to pay those higher premiums that could result. Could you talk a little bit about the State Stability Fund and also the $70 billion of new money for it?
Yeah, although it's not clear that that $70 billion appears to come out of another chunk of money. But there's a short-term fund and a long-term fund, and the idea is to help stabilize premiums for people who are left in the what they call the compliant market, who are buying the plans with the protections that are there now. There a lot of analysts say that it's just not even almost enough money because you're basically splitting the risk pool in two, and you'll have healthy people who buy the non-compliant plans, and you'll have sick people who stay in the plans that that have all the protections. And it's not clear how far that money would really go.
And this money comes, does this money come from the Obamacare taxes that they decide to keep in place, Julie Robner?
Yes, it does. And, you know, originally this bill did sort of three main things. It, as Carrie talked about, it capped the Medicaid program and phased out the Medicaid expansion. It it took away a lot of the requirements, the financial requirements in the Affordable Care Act. There would be no more penalties for people who didn't have health insurance or employers who didn't provide it. And probably most important to a lot of Republicans, it repealed all the taxes that went to pay for the Affordable Care Act, both the Medicaid expansion and the subsidies. As we've mentioned, they made the subsidies smaller. Well, the optics of that were that the bill ended up giving the very wealthy people a tax break in order to take health care away from poor people. And there were even some fairly conservative Republicans who didn't like the way that looked. So basically, they kept two of the taxes that were aimed specifically at wealthy people, including one that's shoring up the Medicare Trust Fund because it's an extra payroll tax for wealthier people. And they're using some of that money, as you said, to put back in to help try to stabilize the individual market. There's $45 billion extra to help people who might be losing Medicaid coverage cope with opioid problems. And there's some money that hasn't been spent back yet, but one presumes that Senate Majority Leader McConnell, trying to get some of these reluctant moderates to sign on, might try to put back in over the weekend.
Well, if it looks so bad to give wealthy people tax cuts and gut all this money from Medicaid, why wouldn't they put some of that money back into Medicaid, which is what seemed to be a real sticking point for some Senate Republicans?
That's a question a lot of people are asking. Why didn't they put that money back into Medicaid? But they didn't.
Yes, clearly they didn't.
I honestly don't know the answer to that, but you are not the first person who's pointed that out.
Well, in addition to that, I was a health reporter briefly before I became an anchor here at KQED. And what you're describing in terms of these healthy pools and sick pools, that sounds a lot like what we had before the Affordable Care Act, where you had insurers on the individual market who would try to avoid literally covering sick people, right? Like denying people with pre-existing conditions or creating plans that wouldn't meet their needs and trying to attract healthier people. So how would we be avoiding the same outcome with this current bill?
Well, not only we wouldn't, but the insurance industry is kind of freaked out by this because they have stopped doing that. They were required to not do it anymore, and so they don't. So they don't really have all of these, you know, departments and actuaries and people, you know, doing these, combing through people's medical records to, you know, medically underwrite them, because it's been illegal. It was eliminated from the individual market, and to bring it back, they'd have to reconstitute all of that. That's why we're seeing the insurance industry as unhappy about this as most of the, you know, the provider groups who are very concerned about, you know, patients unable to pay their bills.
Even though, Carrie Feibel, it sounds like the money is being funneled to them to some degree.
To some degrees, but it's not enough money. And California has tried this before. I mean, I've done some reporting on the high-risk pool that California had years ago before the Affordable Care Act. We had it for two decades. It was widely agreed upon that it didn't work. It was a failure. The premiums that you had to pay to get into the high-risk pool were very high. And there were caps, you know, $75,000 a year. That's what you could get. And if you had cancer or some other serious illness, you were going to exceed that. And it got so bad, the funding was so inadequate that there was a waiting list. And people were on the waiting list for months, even years. And some of them would pass away waiting to get insured through this high-risk pool. So the track record isn't great in most states, including California.
Carrie Feibel is health editor for KQED, and we're also talking with Julie Robner, chief Washington correspondent at Kaiser Health News. Okay, so Julie Robner, we have this bill. We have at least two senators who said that they will not support it. Can you talk about, I mean, Mitch McConnell has said that he intends to take up the revised bill next week, but does he even have the votes to begin debate?
Well, he doesn't yet, although, you know, when you talk to members of the leadership, they say, well, we will by the time we vote. I mean, I think there's all this pressure. On the one hand, Republicans have been promising for 7 years, more than 7 years, when the Affordable Care Act passed to repeal and replace it. You've got members of the Senate who've been elected or reelected twice, making the same promise in 2010 and again in 2016. So there's a huge imperative to do something. On the other hand, there are a lot of Republicans who don't like this bill. There are only 52 Republicans right now, so they can lose two, which they have already done. But the next person who comes out and says no basically kills the bill. And there are a lot of members who are still saying, I'm still looking at it, or I want to wait and see what the Congressional Budget Office says about, you know, how much it would cost and how many people would lose insurance. There are a lot of members that are still on the fence, particularly moderates who are concerned about the Medicaid cuts. Senator Susan Collins, who's one of the, she's from Maine, and she's one of the two declared no's, said she doesn't even know why the Medicaid cuts are in here, that that putting a cap on Medicaid is not something that has anything to do with the Affordable Care Act, that goes back to, as Carrie said, the beginning of the program in 1965, that it was an open-ended entitlement. Whatever states choose to spend on low-income populations, the federal government would match, and this would end that. And there are a lot of senators who say, you know, it's fine to have that debate, but we should be having it separately from the debate over the ACA.
And speaking of the politics of this, too, can you just talk about how unusual the process has been for this, for a bill of this magnitude?
Bizarre is about the only word that I can use. I've been covering Capitol Hill since 1986, so this is my 32nd year. I've covered every major health care bill since then, and there have been quite a few. And I've never seen anything quite like this, where it's being, you know, even though they've now spent months on it, it really is being rushed through. It hasn't had any committee consideration in the Senate. They're going straight to the floor without letting the committees actually, you know, either even have, you know, not just have hearings, but have markups and looking at it. They've made these fairly substantial changes again over the course of a few days without sort of vetting it through sort of the normal, you know, health policy intelligentsia process. And, you know, maybe they don't, maybe they think that the health policy people really don't know what they're talking about. But these would make really enormous changes to the healthcare system that is now a sixth, getting towards a fifth of the U.S. economy with really very little outside consideration.
And will there be an opportunity to offer amendments at least?
There is, although people keep talking about the open amendment process. They're doing this bill under a budget process called budget reconciliation, which is intended to make changes to permanent programs in the budget that don't come up every year in the spending bills. And there are very strict rules because under this process, you only need 50 votes to pass rather than the normal 60 because you can't filibuster it. So you can offer amendments, but the amendments have to be germane to the underlying bill, which is not true of most Senate amendments. And they can't add to the deficit unless they have something to offset that spending. So the amendments are open but constrained. There's only 20 hours of debate. There literally is a clock that runs. At the end of that, they have something called Votorama, where members can offer as many amendments as they want, as long as they're germane, until they basically can't stay on their feet anymore. I mean, it's not like they go home and come back and do it again. It's just one continuous voting session. I looked it up. I think the longest one was something slightly over 24 hours, but they can't string it out for days and days because they all have to be there to vote.
We're talking about the latest draft of the Senate GOP health care bill released yesterday, the changes in it, or lack thereof of certain changes in it, and what this latest version means for California and the political process that got us here. We're joined by Carrie Feibel, health editor of KQED, and Julie Robner, chief Washington correspondent of Kaiser Health News. And I'd like to invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation. What do you want to know about this bill or its effect on California? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. On Facebook, you can tweet us at KQED Forum, and you can email us at forum@kqed.org. We heard from David, who writes, ideally, this is one more step on the road to a single-payer system, the only one that is truly about caring for people instead of profits. Carrie Feibel, there was a lot of momentum for single payer. Then there was the bill that kind of quashed some of that a little bit. Can you just talk a little bit about single payer and whether they could benefit from sort of the concern about the Senate health care bill?
Absolutely. Politically, momentum-wise, California, people who want single payer in California have benefited from what's going on in Congress. There's a lot of thinking, let's try this again. California has tried it a couple times, has gotten really close to passing single payer, but it's been vetoed by most recently Governor Schwarzenegger. And so there was another push this year in the legislature backed by the California Nurses Association and many other groups. And it did get through the Senate. It has been stalled now in the Assembly. There's been a lot of infighting among Democrats in California, sort of the inverse of what's going on in the GOP in D.C., over, you know, moderate Democrats who say, look, this is not the time for this. We have to defend the progress we've made under the Affordable Care Act. That's where we need to focus our energies. And more progressive Democrats saying, this is exactly showing us what all our flaws are in our health system. Let's just leap over all those flaws, start this new single-payer health system. But again, it often comes down to money, and it would not be cheap or easy to get there. But for now, it's not happening in the legislature, probably not this year. Maybe next year they'd look at it again.
Well, Kurt writes, there has to be a way to cut the enormous cost of health care in the U.S. It should include coverage if you lose your job and or get divorced. Pick the nation with the best and most admired health care system and implement that here in the U.S. Julie Rovner, so Lindsey Graham of South Carolina and Bill Cassidy of Louisiana proposed an alternative plan actually shortly before, right around the same time that Mitch McConnell unveiled his latest version Thursday. Can you describe this plan and whether it has any legs?
Yeah, this is an idea. It's actually sort of a modification of an idea that Senator Cassidy and Senator Susan Collins floated in January, which is to say, okay, for people who like the Affordable Care Act, for states that like it, you can continue to do it. And for states that don't like it, we're going to give you money and you can do whatever you want to do. I think it would be very difficult for the same reason it would be very difficult for a state to do single payer, which is that the healthcare system actually is profoundly federalized at this point. You have how Medicaid, as has been pointed out, is now one in every four people in the U.S. are on Medicaid. That is at least marginally, you know, nominally state run. You have 55 some million people on Medicare. You have, I forget the number, but some enormous number of people who have job health insurance on the job from multi-state companies who can't be regulated by states. They can only be regulated by the federal government. So you have all of this, you know, funding that's flowing either to or from the federal government. It's hard for states to latch on to that. You know, on the other hand, it would be, I could see how people would talk about, you know, wanting to get to single payer. There's people who are afraid that we might get to single payer and people who want to get to single payer. And, you know, we may have to go through trying absolutely everything first.
Well, we'll have more with Julie Rovner of Kaiser Health News and Carrie Feibel of KQED after the break. We're talking about the latest draft of the Senate GOP health care bill released yesterday. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum. Stay with us. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Senate Republicans have released their updated plan to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, but it's struggling to unite GOP support. At least two Republican senators are expected to vote against it, and that's all the bill can afford to lose. Add to that, two other Republican senators have released an alternative plan. We're looking at the latest version of the GOP health bill, known as the BCRA, and the way it affects California, with Carrie Feibel, health editor of KQED, and Julie Rovner, Chief Washington Correspondent for Kaiser Health News. And with you, our listeners, give us a call at 866-733-6786 if you have a question about the health bill. Again, that's 866-733-6786. Post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. You can email us, forum@kqed.org. You can tweet us at KQED Forum, and you can also find us on Facebook. And let's go first to Hardeep in Santa Rosa. Hi, Hardeep.
Hi there. Yeah, I had a question about, you know, in the original ACA and then in this bill, nobody's dealt with the cost of health care. Like, there was a report done by the New York Times about the cost of IV fluids for here versus France. And I think that if we could really get into and address the cost of healthcare and why everything is so expensive, markups and everything, then we wouldn't have an insurance problem because we would be controlling the actual cost and not just trying to backstop it with overpaying for insurance.
Hardeep, thanks. Controlling the cost of healthcare, has that been part of the discussion very much, Gary Feibel?
It has not about these bills, but he's absolutely right. I mean, these bills and the fight over the Affordable Care Act and the Republican versions are about coverage. It's about who gets insurance coverage, who doesn't, and how much out-of-pocket they'll have to pay. And underneath all that is this much bigger systemic problem of cost. We have extremely high costs in the United States and inefficiencies. There's been multiple articles written about pharmaceutical costs, which I think a lot of people are familiar with, but you know, as he said, IVs, hospital care, medical devices, all sorts of things. And when people said that, you know, they are unhappy with the Affordable Care Act, it's a very legitimate complaint because I think a lot of that is people are unhappy with the cost of health care.
You mean the cost of health care and the cost of their premiums?
Right. Well, the cost of health care is what drives the cost of the premium. So, you know, if you're getting a subsidy from the federal government, that might shield you from that effect. But if you're not, you're going to feel it. People who have, you know, half of the country gets coverage through a job-based plan. They're also affected by this. A lot of jobs are telling people, you know, we're going to pass on the cost to you, our workers, by making you take a high deductible plan. You'll have to pay, you know, $2,000 before you even your coverage even kicks in. So, that's a big complaint. April Domboski, our health reporter here, she went up to the northeast corner of California into some very rural, remote areas and did a lot of reporting about how people felt about the Affordable Care Act. And that was their big complaint. I mean, people there were saying, I'm going to pay the penalty. The premiums just aren't worth it for me. I'm never going to hit that deductible. But again, the Republican bill doesn't deal with this issue either. So neither Obamacare or these Republican bills really get to the core of that complaint.
Right. So even yes, Julie Robner, go ahead.
I would say I wanted to add to that. You know, I've been getting very frustrated over this. The debate that's going on in Washington is basically how to divide up the pie of who pays for coverage. And nobody is looking at how much we pay for coverage. And how much we pay for health care. And the main difference between the U.S. and all of our other, you know, first world trading partners is that they all control the prices that they pay in health care. And the U.S. not only doesn't control them, but over the last decade, there's been this, you know, enormous influx of people whose jobs it is to help healthcare providers make even more money. So you have, you know, as we've seen, older drugs suddenly being doubled, tripled, you know, going up by hundreds of percent in cost. You see medical devices, same thing, not new ones, old ones. You're seeing people basically coming in to help maximize the profit in the healthcare industry while everybody else is fighting about who's going to pay for it rather than everybody else saying, why are we paying so much?
Well, Jessica writes, I beg of you to stop calling the Affordable Care Act Obamacare. This pejorative nickname distances the discussion from the facts and allows people to focus on the wrong issues. Julie Robner, is this something you hear a lot?
I don't hear it a lot, but I have to say I stopped calling it Obamacare. I know that the president himself, President Obama himself, decided that it was okay to call it Obamacare because he was embracing it as, yes, I like it. There's a now famous and viral Jimmy Kimmel bit where he went out on the streets of Los Angeles and asked people which they preferred, the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, and they, to the person, said that they preferred the Affordable Care Act, even though they're the same thing. They said to one of the women, you know, they're the same thing, and she's like, no, they aren't. So I've pretty much stopped using it myself.
Well, I appreciate Jessica's point. We here do use it interchangeably, and I wonder if politically now it's actually better for Obama that he's associated with the Affordable Care Act in this way as a result of some of the difficulties that Republicans have had in trying to get this bill through.
Certainly, one of the things we've seen is that the popularity of whatever you want to call it, Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, has gone up during this debate. You know, there are clearly problems with it. There are a lot of people who are paying too much. As I mentioned, you know, everybody's paying too much, but particularly people who have to pay for it themselves. But I think they're looking at what the alternatives are and thinking, yeah, maybe it's not so bad.
Well, I will try to heed Jessica's request and use ACA more often. But what we're talking about leads me to my next question, which is something that I've wondered throughout this whole thing, Julie Robner, which is, why not just fix the problems with it? I know that people are saying it's political suicide to try to do that, but why?
Well, because the Republicans promised that they were going to repeal and replace it. And I think that the what's being sort of whispered about in Washington is that if this effort fails, and there's a considerable possibility that this effort will fail, then they might go back and try to fix at least some of the immediate things. The uncertainty among the insurers that they're going to get these you know, billions of dollars of cost-sharing subsidies that the federal government is supposed to have to pay them, but is now monthly threatening not to. Whether or not they're going to enforce the individual mandate, the requirement that most people have insurance or pay a fine. Those two things just by themselves can cause a 20% difference or a 30% difference in how high premiums are. So those would be really easy things. But again, it would be the Republicans having to concede that they want to, that, you know, that the Affordable Care Act is here to stay, which occasionally they say, and then they go back and saying, no, we promised to repeal it, so we're going to.
Well, even Lisa Murkowski said, why don't we focus on the urgency of the concerns with the Affordable Care Act? So I'm just wondering how strong that current might be among Republicans to try to work with Democrats on something. I mean, Susan Collins of Maine has certainly voiced some interest in doing that.
Well, they would have to work with Democrats to do it because there are conservative Republicans who still say, you know, even these bills don't go far enough to repeal, you know, the Affordable Care Act, which, of course, they can't actually do without 60 votes. They can only repeal parts of it. But they think that they could, and they could repeal more parts of it than are in these bills. And that's what the conservatives are saying. So the only way to get majorities would be to work with Democrats. Mm-hmm. Democrats have, you know, suggested they're not saying that, you know, we won't do anything other than single payer. What they're saying is you have to take repeal off the table and then we'll talk to you about fixing it. And also, I think they would have to take these Medicaid changes off the table. That's something that Democrats would not vote for as even part of a fix bill.
Well, let's hear from Michael in Boston. Hi, Michael.
Hi. The problems people have with the Cruz changes highlight the fact that people really don't want a market in health care because a market implies that you can pay less and get worse goods. And we've decided as a society that there should be a minimum standard of medical care, so a market really can't function. I mean, in a pure free market, you could pay very little and get really dodgy, no, even fraudulent care.
Michael, thanks for that. Julie Rodner, do you have any response to Michael's comment about people's response to Cruz in the healthcare market and how it functions?
Well, I don't know that we've decided as a society that everybody should have, you know, comprehensive care. We've decided as a matter of federal law that everybody should have comprehensive care. But there seem to be lots of people who are willing to take their chances and buy, you know, skinny or very skinny or just catastrophic plans, you know, particularly people who are young and or healthy. So this is the debate that's going on.
Sure.
And it's very hard to let people do that and still have a market that functions. I mean, the way it functioned before was that people who had pre-existing conditions were basically either priced out or fenced out. They were simply either not allowed to buy coverage or they were only allowed to buy coverage at a prohibitive price. If you want to have that, which most people do, then it's really hard to let some people opt out and have, you know, skinnier coverage. That's the difficulty.
Well, Karen writes, I lost my job in health coverage. Is there any problem with signing up for the Affordable Care Act today? Carrie Feibel, do you want to answer Karen's question?
That is a tough one. I mean, no. State officials are saying, please, Covered California is open for business. You don't need to wait for the official enrollment period if you have a change in life circumstances, like you lose your job. You should immediately go to the website and start talking to them and apply. You know, the state has been very firm that, you know, contracts are going forward. They're negotiating for, you know, 2019. And I mean, I think this is the time to say that compared to other states, you're hearing a lot of stories nationally about parts of certain states where there's counties that don't even have an insurer that's promising they'll be there in this exchange market for 2018. But Covered California has not had that. We've had a relatively healthy market. There's not a single county that has no or even one insurance company. There's always a choice in every county. So, you know, I would say definitely go get insurance. Well, it's there now. As far as later, we don't know.
Speaking of Covered California, it's expected to announce its 2018 premiums next month.
Yeah.
Okay. How might those look, Carrie?
Well, I mean, premiums go up. That's almost a universal law of the physics of healthcare in our country because we haven't controlled the costs, as we discussed. So they won't be flat. They will rise, but most people are expecting California individual market rates will be rising less than other states. We'll see much steeper rises.
Because we have our own market here. We have a much bigger pool
and there's,
of people.
Right. And we have, you know, officials who work very actively to negotiate with insurance companies. They work really hard to keep the rates down. And that's how it's worked. And we've seen that for the past couple of years.
Well, Merrilee writes, Republicans are proving why they should not be legislating the business sector. They just don't understand the insurance market, which requires healthy people to subsidize the sick ones. This has always been the case. Let's hear from Patrick in Pleasanton. Hi, Patrick.
Good morning. Am I in the air? I'm not
sure. Yes, you are. You're on.
Okay. Good morning. I apologize. Question is, if you look at the metrics, I believe combined government expenditures and private expenditures for healthcare are one of the highest in the world, but our outcomes are not even near the top of the world. Why aren't we not focusing on outcomes rather than the cost?
Yeah, thanks, Patrick. So taking it a step further, you know, we should focus on cost and also we should focus on outcomes, Julie Rovner. And the Affordable Care Act had some provisions to try to do that.
It did, you know, that and which always sort of and they would not be impacted directly by these bills there. And there are efforts and there were efforts already underway in the private sector to focus on outcomes that would provide better care. I mean, there is an effort to improve quality that rather than just have this sort of, you know, the traditional fee for service where doctors got paid for everything they did and hospitals got paid for every day you were in the hospital, which gave both doctors and hospitals incentives to do more. Now they're trying to measure outcomes and you know, basically paying for people to come out healthier or do better. And it's starting and it, you know, it's a whole different kind of mindset and a whole different, you know, way of doing things. And so it's coming along in sort of fits and starts. But that's definitely the effort in the healthcare industry. Although, as I mentioned, there's sort of a parallel effort in the healthcare industry to just, you know, make more and more and more money. So they're kind of, you know, fighting at odds with each other.
Well, Rick writes, the sad fact is that the Affordable Care Act is a very flawed law that's been hurting the children of our great country and is failing in most of our states. The Affordable Care Act is based on a false promise of care for all while taxing everyone for reduced quality care. Now, certainly, Carrie Feibel, you raised the point that with the Affordable Care Act, though it's largely been seen as a success here in California, that there are still problems with the need for price relief in those rural parts of the state. And that's because there just simply aren't enough. There simply doesn't need to be enough competition there for insurers.
And that's always been a problem in rural areas all over the country, is that there's less people, there's fewer hospitals, you have to go farther, that drives up costs. A lot of doctors don't always want to go live in rural areas. So there's a lot of movement for years to try to incentivize care to come where there isn't care right now. I don't agree that it's been a failure in all over. I mean, there was a federal report that came out not so long ago, just a couple weeks ago. Julie, you might know more about it, but it said, you know, despite this perception and this rhetoric that Obamacare is failing in these individual markets, for the most part, the markets are looking healthy and actually a lot of the insurers will be breaking even this year.
Julie Rovner, go ahead.
There have been a number of reports that have found, you know, there were some big increases in some places.
Yes.
From 2016 to 2017. And mostly analysts think that was a result of plans underpricing for competitive reasons until they figured out, you know, what was going on. So, well, you had, you know, in some parts of the country, rates only went up 2 or 3%. In, you know, some notable places like Arizona, rates went up 100% because they had been much lower. So what's happened is that rates have kind of, you know, steadied themselves in their various geographic markets. And there's every indication that that insurers that the market is stabilizing. And in fact, there was a report that came out not too long ago that showed that most insurers are actually making profits in 2017, which would suggest that they wouldn't really need to raise rates very much for 2018. But for the fact, as I mentioned, that there's all this uncertainty and insurers hate uncertainty. So a lot of them are raising rates and they're saying this. We don't have to infer it. They're actually saying it in their rate request that, well, if you promise that you're going to pay these cost sharing subsidies that help low income people pay their deductibles and other out of pocket costs, and you promise that you're going to enforce the individual mandate, we'll lower this rate request increase by 25%.
Julie Rovner is Chief Washington Correspondent at Kaiser Health News. We're also talking with Carrie Feibel, Health Editor at KQED. And we're talking now to Eric in Oakland. Hi, Eric.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great.
I just wanted to say, I think overall people like miss the fact that, you know, all of us, kind of the only people eligible for health care at the end of the day, are working healthy. As soon as we have a catastrophic illness or something, you know, goes wrong, we then have to get unemployment, try to cobra our insurance, and we end up on, you know, disability or on and Medicaid, Medicare, and things like that. And the rest of us subsidize all of those people down the line anyway, and government-run health care works just fine for them. However, like, we allow insurers to siphon millions, billions of dollars in profit off of the front end for that. And as soon as, you know, like I said, as soon as somebody becomes ill or something goes wrong, very quickly we burn through all our options to have that private insurer, and we end up on government-run health care anyway. And I just think the whole system kind of, you know, is a bit, you know, it's a bit of a scam kind of in that way, where we all think we have private insurance. However, we're only like a catastrophic illness or two away from being on disability ourselves.
Carrie Feibel, you wanted to comment on Eric's point.
Yes, it's true. I mean, we don't have a system in our country. We have a bunch of different systems. And if you fall out of one pool, the job-based private insurance pool, you're going to flop into another. You'll maybe get on disability insurance. You'll be covered by Medicaid or Medi-Cal or Medicare, but that's a different type of care. You might have to go get different doctors. There's a lot of cost inefficiencies in even having people moving around and churning through all these pools. One thing to point out based on that comment is that, you know, the changes we've been focused on in California are what's happening in the covered California marketplace. And these individual markets throughout the whole country, that's only 7% of the American population. Only 7% of people are covered through that individual market, 20% in Medicaid, and half of us through jobs. But even if the changes through this Republican plan only affect covered California, there's going to be ripple effects. So if California sees more uninsured people, they're going to go back to the ER for their care, and hospitals are going to raise premiums on job-based plans to pay for that. So, you know, even though there's these different pools, they all affect each other, and you can't really isolate them from each other.
I have a story that actually
Julie Rosner
within the past hour on the Kaiser Health News website on exactly that point, that even if you retain insurance, having, you know, 22 million or so more uninsured people will affect your care, particularly in sort of sparsely populated areas where it will be harder to find doctors, harder to find hospitals, harder to find specialized care, things that are expensive and need a lot of money to keep going, like emergency departments and burn units and neonatal intensive care. So that even people who are insured will be affected if there are many, many more uninsured, as could be the case.
Well, let me thank Eric for the call and also ask you, what are you predicting the CBO score will be, Julie Rovner, as a result of this bill? I mean, you mentioned 22 million, which was the last CBO estimate. Where are we going to be early next week?
Yeah, I think most people think that potentially uninsured number won't change very much, because a big chunk of it came from Medicaid, which is, as we discussed, the Medicaid provisions haven't changed very much. And actually, most of the provisions that the CBO said would result in fewer people having coverage also haven't paid very much. What will happen, what the CBO might say about the individual market with all of these, you know, the Cruz amendment is unclear. It's also unclear if the CBO is even going to be estimating that part. Mm-hmm. There was some talk yesterday that they might ask the Department of Health and Human Services to estimate it instead, because that might take less time. They're also more likely to have a more favorable view of it. The CBO said earlier this year that they will not judge insurance that doesn't meet a certain level. They didn't really say what it was, but they won't really bare bones insurance. They will not count as insurance. And I think that may be something that Republicans are a little bit worried about.
Yes. Well, and am I correct in my assumption that the Congressional Budget Office's report will come out early next week?
We are expecting something from the Congressional Budget Office early next week.
Okay.
We don't know whether it will be all of the changes or not. I think that's sort of the part that's unclear.
But Monday or Tuesday.
They will say something. Yes, Monday or Tuesday. Yes, because Senate, you know, Majority Leader McConnell says he wants this to go to the floor next week, and they have to have a CBO score of some sort. That's part of the rules of how this budget procedure
right.
works. So, yeah, it's still very unclear.
Well, Elizabeth asks, what is the value of the tax cuts embedded in the legislation? Julie Romner, do you want to take that as well?
I'm trying to remember. All of them together, I want to say, are $600 or $700 billion over 10 years.
Wow.
I don't actually remember how much. And this was sort of the origin of why they needed sort of to make the Medicaid changes, because in order to rescind all of these were all the tax increases
right.
that paid for the Affordable Care Act. So when they take them away, well, the Affordable Care Act, even though they don't like to point this out, actually saved money over time. It raised more money than it spent. So if you're going to take them away, even if you took, and they want to keep obviously some of the subsidies and some of it, they needed to find money from another place. And therefore, it was very convenient to cap Medicaid and save $700 billion.
But that figure includes the Obamacare taxes that are actually being proposed to be kept or returned to the bill under this new version?
Yes, that's the total number. I can't remember the splitting
out. Sort of the difference,
I think it's about $200 billion of them, the taxes that they're keeping. But, you know, they are still getting rid of all of the taxes on the healthcare industry that they imposed. There was a health insurance tax. There was a medical device tax. There was a tax on tanning salons. You know, all of those taxes would still go away under this bill.
Well, let's hear from Joan in El Cerrito. Hi, Joan.
Hi. I just tuned in, so I hope no one has repeated this, but I'm a nurse, and I've been in healthcare for over 40 years, and I've been very politically active trying to support the ACA. And what I find is disappointing, even in NPR, and I'm a big supporter of NPR, that there's always mention that there's huge issues with the ACA, and yet they don't mention what that problem is, that when Obama tried to pass this in Congress, he didn't get the adequate funding for what he asked for. He got one-tenth of what he asked for in terms of educating the public and setting up the exchanges. And one other comment I'll just squeeze in. It's called, you never hear the actual name, it's called the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, because it actually reshaped the way healthcare is practiced. And I could go into all the details, but I realize there isn't time for that.
Well, Joan, thanks for that reminder. John writes, why isn't anyone asking how older adults will pay for higher premiums when they have less money? And Lance asks, I'm curious to know if Congress will subject themselves to whatever plan they implement. Julie Robner?
All right, last one first. Congress won't. This is a big one of these faux scandals that Congress is exempt from these changes. But Congress actually was covered itself under the Affordable Care Act, and they are in. They're actually most of them in the D.C. Small Business Exchange for complicated reasons. The reason that they don't cover themselves in this bill is it has to do with the technicalities of the budget process that they're using. It would have been outside the committee jurisdiction. So they're not doing it because they want to exempt themselves. They're doing it because otherwise their bill wouldn't get the protections that it needs. If I could go back to the earlier question, the caller, though, about the Republicans and their efforts to sort of undermine the Affordable Care Act, that's really true. One of the big Republican talking points now is that the ACA was failing before Donald Trump was elected. And that, I don't know whether I would say failing, but the ACA had problems before Donald Trump was elected because Republicans have been systematically trying to starve it of money since they took over the Congress in 2010. So in a sense, it's true. Yes, it has been having troubles since before Donald Trump, but that's because the Republicans were trying to make it have troubles.
Yes. Well, that was an important point that Joan was making. And the other thing that I wanted to ask you about, Julie Robner, because I know this is an issue that you care a lot about, is how women are affected under this new bill. You know, two female Republican senators have opposed the provision that cuts off federal funding from Planned Parenthood because they realize that it provides crucial services to women in their states, just basic healthcare services for women.
That's right. And it actually that is in the bill, and they didn't take it out. And it interesting only deprives Planned Parenthood of Medicaid funding for a year.
Yes, one
because
year.
One year, because if they did it any longer, it would cost money, because the Congressional Budget Office says that, well, women wouldn't get these contraceptive services, and some of them would get pregnant, and some of them would have babies, and they would all qualify for Medicaid. So it would cost money.
And is the birth control mandate also in danger here?
Yes, the birth control mandate is also potentially could be eliminated. Plus, there's a separate bill that just got introduced, the annual spending bill, that would not just take funding away from Planned Parenthood for the federal family planning program, Title 10. It would eliminate Title 10 entirely.
Well, Carrie Feibel, if this bill comes to pass with California's political leanings, what are we likely to see either among lawmakers, health advocates here?
I mean, they're in a very difficult spot. There's pressures coming at them from all directions. Federally, if these Medicaid cuts go through, there's the pressure we discussed on Medi-Cal services, how many people get to stay on Medi-Cal. And there's still this pressure within the California Democratic Party to take a serious look at single payer. The problem is, if these Medi-Cal cuts go through, single payer, as it's been envisioned so far, really relied on all the federal funding that we currently get from the feds. That would be somehow rolled over. We'd still need federal permission to do that, but rolled over into this bigger pool. California would just create this one giant insurance pool. And but if, you know, these cuts go through, where would that money come from? So again, there's no easy solutions, and I think people really need to know soon so we can plan for 2018.
Well, we'll be watching for that vote next week. Carrie Feibel, health editor of KQED, thank you.
Thank you, Mina.
And Julie Rovner, chief Washington correspondent of Kaiser Health News, thanks so much for joining us this morning as well.
My pleasure.
I'm Mina Kim. Up next, we'll be talking about summer podcasts to listen to, a lighter subject, so stay with us for that. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.